Ask the average American what our nation's primary security concern in the Middle East is, and chances are the answer will be oil. But if you could put the same question to the Founding Fathers, they'd be most worried about the Barbary pirates. Historian Michael Oren, renowned in his field for his exhaustive research, tells the colorful story of America's long involvement in the Middle East in his book Power, Faith, and Fantasy. Steve Paulson found it riveting.
I confess I had no idea the Middle East figured into U.S. foreign policy in the late 18th century, but you say this part of the world was a big problem for the New Republic right after the War for Independence.
At the time of America's independence in 1776, about one-fifth of all American exports overseas were going through the Middle East. America was a seafaring nation. These 13 colonies were along the shoreline, maritime countries, very, very heavily dependent on foreign trade. And four North African Middle Eastern kingdoms, Morocco, Tunis, Tripoli, and Algiers, were sending pirates out to prey on this trade. And it was literally destroying American commerce. Americans were afraid to ship goods on their own ships. And it posed an existential threat to the United States, which had a very, very fragile economy in its first years after independence.
So these ships were sailing into the Mediterranean Sea, and the pirates off of North Africa were just grabbing them, and in some cases holding the crew hostage.
Well, America faced its first hostage crisis in the Middle East in the 1780s, when 127 American sailors were taken prisoner by Algiers and Tripoli and enslaved.
Well, and it's worth pointing out that before the War for Independence, they were protected by the British Navy, the most powerful force in the world. But of course, at that point, the British Navy did not have much incentive to protect any American ships.
And even after the war, many Americans didn't want a navy. They were afraid of a navy. They had had a bad experience with a big navy not too long ago, the British Navy. They were afraid that a navy would pose a threat to America's emerging democratic institutions. They were afraid that a navy could embroil the United States in European wars. And navies were very expensive to build, and America finished the war with a major war debt, didn't have the money to build warships. So there was a solid block of opinion in the United States that said they didn't want warships, and the United States was better off bribing these pirates not to attack American merchant ships than it was building ships and going off to attack the pirates.
So this was a huge debate, whether to negotiate with the pirates or whether to basically force them to allow American ships to go through.
It was a debate whether to depart from the age-old European practice, which was to bribe the pirates, or to embark on a uniquely American policy of fighting the pirates. But the debate went even further. It got caught up on the whole question of whether the United States should be loosely confederated, as they were between 1776 and 1789, whether the United States would be a plural noun or a singular noun, or whether the United States should federate under a central government, because you can't create a navy unless you have a government that's capable of raising taxes to make the navy. And so in 1787, when the delegates from the states convened in Philadelphia to discuss creating a constitution, the question of the Barbary pirate threat was very much on their minds.
Well, tell me what happened to instigate this formation of the Navy and basically to get American leaders to want to project power into that part of the world. I mean, there were some humiliating episodes, weren't there?
Terrible, humiliating episodes. They actually came after the formation of the Navy. The Navy created in 1794 was six frigates, one of which was the U.S. Philadelphia. The U.S. Philadelphia ran aground while chasing a Tripolitan, as they were called, from Tripoli, Tripoli pirates, and the crew was held hostage for several years, a major hostage crisis. But the debate ran very, very deeply within the American political consciousness. It had to do with whether the United States was going to embark on this separate policy, distinguish itself from Europe, whether the United States was going to take this military effort across the ocean. It's a long way to go back then in this distant Middle East, whether the United States would get bogged down in a protracted Middle Eastern conflict. And it was a protracted conflict. The Barbary Wars lasted from 1783 to 1815. So really the longest military conflict the United States has ever fought was in the Middle East. Americans back in the later 18th century, early part of the 19th century, were facing many decisions that Americans today have to make in the Middle East.
Now, today we have a lot of scholars and entire research institutes that specialize in the Middle East. But 200 years ago, did Americans know anything about the Middle East or about Islam?
They knew very little about it. Most of their information was secondhand. They could talk to slaves, for example, in the South who had come from Arabic-speaking areas. One of their major sources of information on the Middle East was the book 1001 Arabian Nights, which is actually the second most popular book after the Bible on the colonial bookshelf. And this, of course, is a collection of medieval Persian tales that describe carpets orbiting minarets and harem girls that are very, very sensuous, Aladdin and Ali Baba, but bear no real resemblance to any real Middle East. So there's a tremendous amount of disinformation.
So the Orient was, I mean, it was seen as this land of mystery and exoticism.
And also of threat, it's important to say. You know, recently we've had a Congressman Ellison who has sworn in to Congress as America's first Muslim member of Congress, and he swore in on a Quran that was found in Thomas Jefferson's library. That Quran was a translation made by George Sayles in 1734, and that Quran talks that the reason George Sayles is translating this Quran is to warn good Protestants about the dangers of Islam. So there was very much a sense inherited, I think, from medieval times in early colonial America that this area of the world was not only mystical and romantic and erotic, but was also hostile and potentially dangerous.
Well, tell me about Thomas Jefferson, because he took these problems quite seriously. In fact, he said the Middle East was his major foreign policy concern.
Right. In the second term of office, he listed his foreign policy priorities, and he listed relations with the Middle East as his number one priority for the simple reason that, again, these pirates were destroying American commerce overseas, and the country simply could not survive this type of depredations. Prior to the Jefferson administration, John Adams was paying as much as 20% of all federal revenues in bribery to North Africa. Extraordinary thing. Jefferson believed that the United States could not go on bribing the pirates, that the more you bribe them, the more they would demand. And he also had a sense of what he called the American temper. He believed that Americans would not abide by blackmail, that Americans strove to achieve what he called an erect and independent attitude in foreign policy. And he acted on it.
What eventually happened to end the Barbary Wars?
Well, eventually in 1815, under Madison's administration, after the War of 1812, when the pirates had resumed their attacks on American shipping, the American Navy was at that point quite strong. Madison sent a flotilla into Tripoli, Algiers, Tunis, and forced these kingdoms to surrender. And by doing so, the United States also embarrassed Europe to doing the same. The next year, a British and Dutch fleet sailed into these same harbors and forced their rulers to capitulate as well. By 1819, an international convention was signed ending Mediterranean piracy once and for all.
Now, most of this history that we've been talking about, going back to the late 1700s, the early 1800s, was a time when the United States was clearly not an imperial power. I mean, they were just starting to flex their muscle. When did the U.S. really start to project power in the Middle East?
America projected significant power even at the beginning of the 19th century. America kept a permanent Mediterranean squadron on patrol intermittently throughout the early half of the 19th century. In the latter half of the 19th century, presidents pretty routinely sent warships into the Middle East to protect missionaries and other American citizens in the area. The U.S. Marines landed in the Middle East no less than six times over the course of the 19th century. But each time it was to protect U.S. citizens. But it's really only after World War II, when the United States emerges as one of the two world superpowers, and America begins to supplant Britain and France as the colonial powers, who were the former colonial powers in the Middle East. They were the major powers in the Middle East in post-war II. And finally, it's only after World War II, when oil becomes a major component in American foreign policy, that America becomes very much engaged in power and power projection in the Middle East.
Does this history matter? I mean, particularly the older history. I mean, is this useful to study for American policymakers today?
I think it's essential to study. I think that Americans today, certainly in the post-9/11 world at the height of the Iraq War, Americans are being asked to make fateful decisions about their policy in the Middle East. And these decisions will impact not only the future of Americans, but impact the future of much of the world. And I think it's essential to be able to make these decisions with them some type of historical point of reference in a context. I think it's essential to understand that Americans have faced similar situations in the past. It's important to understand how they dealt with those decisions and to gain an appreciation of their relative successes and failures so that we can repeat the successes and avoid those failures.
Historian Michael Oren lives in Jerusalem. His latest book is Power, Faith, and Fantasy, America in the Middle East, 1776 to the Present. He talked with Steve Paulson.